Everyone today, I'm thankful for the opportunity to be able to talk about this subject. I wish that I had heard a sermon about this subject maybe 25 or 30 years ago when I first started my work as a gospel preacher. I think it would have been helpful to me, and hopefully it'll be helpful to some in the audience. We never know quite the struggles that people are going through. We see the outside, and sometimes they're pretty good at putting up a front, but we really don't see what's going on or happening behind the scenes. You know, it's kind of like the duck sitting on top of the water. We see what's above the water. We don't see what's below the water. And he may be paddling like crazy underneath the water, and we don't necessarily see that. And that's sometimes true of the people that we see around us in the Lord's church. Now, they may be really struggling with some things, but when we see them at worship or when we're around them, they're putting on a pretty good front, and they may not even know they're putting on a front. They may not even know that they're involved in the battle that they are involved in. And that's the issue with burnout. Is there at least some stages along the way where you're in very serious danger, but you may not fully comprehend that. Somebody else may see it. Somebody else may know it, but you may not be aware of it. And so we want to talk about this today. I want to give you just a basic definition of what burnout is. It's not a clinical definition. There are better definitions out there. And if you want to study it more, then you go and look up some of those definitions. But I want to give a working definition, kind of a simple definition that'll help you to understand in basic layman terms what burnout is. It's fatigue, it's frustration, it's apathy, resulting from prolonged stress, overwork, and intense activity. And so that's what burnout is, and you'll see that in the life of the individual that we're going to study this hour, that individual being Moses. Now, I want you to understand that burnout can occur in both secular and spiritual realms. Now, I think we know that it occurs in secular realms. I think we know that people in the business world sometimes burn out in whatever their professions or careers are. And there are some careers that are more prone to burnout than others. Careers like a police officer or a nurse or a school teacher are more likely to fall into the category of burnout than other occupations, because those are caregiving occupations. And sometimes in caregiving operations or occupations, we give everything we have to give, and we reserve or keep very little for ourselves. Now that's great about us in the sense that we care about people and we want to help people. But if we do not at least take care of ourselves, there will come a point to which we have nothing left to give. We have nothing with which we can help another person because we've given it all away rather than maintaining it and using it properly over the years. Now, I say that this can occur in the secular and in the spiritual realm because sometimes individuals think that those of us who are in the spiritual realm, those of us who are Christians, those of us who are in the Lord's church, that these kinds of things don't happen to us. That these kinds of problems we're immune to these kinds of problems. And there are some problems to which we may be immune. And let me suggest what I mean by that. There are some problems that people in the world get into because they're worldly. They get into them, and the consequences they suffer are as a result of their sins. And we as Christians, knowing what God teaches about that, we may avoid those sins, and we may avoid the consequences that come from those sins. But then there are other things that are just a part of the human condition. And it doesn't matter if you're a Christian or a non-Christian, you're going to face them and you're going to deal with them. Whether you're a Christian or non-Christian, you're going to deal with stress. Whether you're a Christian or non-Christian, you're going to deal with problems. Whether you're a Christian or non-Christian, there are going to be some things that go wrong and happen within your life. That's just a part of the human condition. And even if you are a Christian, you're going to face those kinds of things. Now, if you are a Christian, you have some resources, you have some opportunities to reach out for help that people in the world don't have. And so I'm not suggesting that we're necessarily in the same position they are, but we do to some degree face some of the same problems that they do when it comes to stress, when it comes to burnout, and when it comes to matters like that. Now, in the spiritual realm, there are certain occupations that may be more given to burnout than others. Elders are certainly prone candidates for burnout. Preachers are prone candidates for burnout. They are individuals who, by their very positions, by their very works, they're caregivers. And they can give, and they can give, and they can give, and they can give to the point to where they give themselves completely away, and they burn out. They burn up, maybe even a better way of referring to what happens to them. Now, I want you to understand this point, because we beat ourselves up sometimes. We beat ourselves up by saying, you know, I'm a Christian, I shouldn't be discouraged. I'm a Christian, I shouldn't get depressed. I'm a Christian, I shouldn't... That's not fair. It's not fair, and that's not what the Bible teaches. And so we don't need to beat ourselves up. We're just compounding the problem when we do that. Because Christians get discouraged too. Read the life of Elijah and tell me whether or not great men of God get discouraged. They do. Tell me, as you read the life of Job and you go through the things that Job faced, that you wouldn't have struggled with that. I don't care who you are. I don't care how long you've been a Christian. I don't care how strong you think you are. You're going to deal with some issues like that that are going to, at times, overwhelm you. David talks about that a number of times in the Psalm. The man after God's own heart. And yet he talks about just being overwhelmed with the events and circumstances that are going on in his life. That's going to happen to you too, no matter who you are. Whether you're an elder, a preacher, whoever you are, you're going to face some of those kinds of issues. We want to talk about Moses this hour. Moses was one of the greatest men who ever lived. If anybody could have handled the stresses of life, I'm convinced Moses was on the short list. He was a man of unique abilities, both in his training and in his background. He was a man who, from the very day that he was born into this world, was in a situation that was pressure-packed, in a situation that was making him tough and developing him and giving him the education needed to deal with the test of life. There's nobody got a better education than what Moses did. There was no one who had more opportunities afforded to him than what Moses did. Whether it was in Pharaoh's household, whether it was working with the Egyptian army, or whether it was the wilderness and what he learned in the wilderness, he got an education that prepared him for whatever the challenges of life were. But when we think about Moses, and we read about Moses, if you want to turn in your Bibles to Exodus chapter 18, we see Moses is well on the way to burnout. This great man of God is burning up quickly in Exodus chapter 18. And if it were not for someone who stepped in to help, the rest of the story might have been very, very different. If you had looked up the word burnout in a Hebrew dictionary in Moses' day, you might very well have seen his picture. Because he was the face of it, as we'll see in Exodus chapter 18. He was busy. Really busy. He was stressed to the very limit. He was tired, worn completely out. He was frustrated, bothered by the difficult task that was his. I want you just to think of the sheer magnitude of Moses' ministry. Moses was responsible for millions of individuals. Men, women, and children, families that depended on him for leadership, families that depended upon him for just about everything. I'm a father of four, and sometimes it's overwhelming. But I can't imagine being essentially a father for a nation. And Moses had these families that were dependent, counting on him. He felt the magnitude of all of that. Think of the harsh conditions of the desert and the wilderness. Not only did he have that responsibility, think about the environment in which he had that responsibility. Think about the murmuring that we know that he endured throughout that ministry. Moses' life and the lives of other great men and women are recorded for our learning. Romans 15 and verse 4. Things that are written aforetime are written for our learning, that we, through patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope. God recorded this event from the life of Moses to help us, because He knew that we too would find ourselves sometimes on this road that ultimately leads to burnout. Now, some things I want you to consider very quickly. Moses' life teaches us that burnout can occur in the lives of the most talented people. Nobody excelled Moses in talent, and yet he was on the road to burnout. I want you to understand that burnout can happen to seasoned soldiers. Moses was not a whippersnapper. He wasn't a young man at the time that he's dealing with this. He's dealt with a lot of things for a lot of years, and yet burnout is still a very real possibility for him. It teaches us that burnout can occur to a man who is where God put him and where God wants him to be. Moses wasn't veering off of the path that God wanted him to be on. Moses was where God put him and where God needed him to be. And yet burnout comes to individuals who are even in those situations. Another thing to consider, just kind of in passing, and that is that burnout can occur to individuals who are helping other people with that very problem. Now that's always amazed me. Counselors are giving counseling to somebody else, and yet those counselors themselves deal with some of the same problems and same issues. They're giving and they're giving and they're giving and they're helping people. Those are elders. Elders are caregivers and they're giving care to other people, but elders need care. Preachers are caregivers. They're giving care to other people, but they need somebody to care about them. Because they're elders and they're preachers, but they're men. And they're men that have their own weaknesses, their own frailties, and their own issues and problems. You remember Jesus would say in Luke 4 and verse 23, refer to the statement, "Physician, heal thyself." And sometimes the doctor needs a doctor. Sometimes the doctor needs someone to help him. That's true of preachers and elders and church workers. Paul talked about the possibility that he himself would be a castaway. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, in verses 24 through 27, he's trying to help other people. He's doing everything within his life to help other people get to heaven, but he knew that if he wasn't careful, he could lose himself. He could be a castaway while he was helping other people to go to heaven. I don't know about you. One of the saddest things that seems to me that I know is going to occur, I know that there are going to be people who are going to lose their souls, and yet there will be people in heaven because of them. They spent their lives preaching and teaching and working for God, but they lost themselves, but there will be people in heaven that were there as a result of a work at some point within their lives. That's sad to me. It's sad to me that we can lose ourselves while we're helping other people to go to heaven. That's always a danger that we have to be aware of. Go to the 18th chapter of the book of Exodus if you haven't already gone there. I want to give you some background of what's occurring in this chapter. We'll talk about it in more detail. But Jethro comes to visit Moses. Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses, comes and he brings Moses' wife and Moses' sons with him. They've been separated because of the battle and danger and maybe because of other issues. They've been taken away. But now the battle's been fought. Now there's a relative period of peace. And so they're brought back together with Moses. And while Jethro is there, Jethro witnesses something that concerns him, that Moses is doing. And he voices that concern to Moses and helps Moses through his counsel to avert what would have been a great problem for him at some point down the road. And so that's the chapter that we're talking about here. And so we want to look at this from the viewpoint of Jethro, and we want to see if we might not be a Jethro that could help somebody else that is dealing with burnout or dealing with this problem. There are five things that I think we see within this context that may help us to deal with it. The first one is evaluate. Evaluate. If you look at Exodus chapter 18, you're going to see that the Bible says that Jethro saw what Moses was doing. It says in verse 14, "And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people." So Jethro is watching. He's watching Moses. Verse 13, Moses is sitting and he's judging from morning to evening. People are standing before him, and Jethro sees that. Now, Jethro immediately sees a problem. Moses hasn't seen it yet. Moses may be feeling some of the effects of it. He may know, I sure am tired all the time. He may know, you know, my neck and my shoulders, they're hurting me. They seem to be tight. I seem to be stressed about something. He doesn't fully understand it, but he may be feeling some of the effects of it. But Jethro sees it, and he sees it clearly. Sometimes when you're in the middle of something, you lack the perspective or the ability to see it clearly. Somebody from the outside sometimes can look at it and immediately say, there's the problem, that's what needs to be done. But you're in it, and being in it, it's hard for you to have that same perspective. That's when someone comes to us and expresses something to us, we ought to give ear to it. Now, they may or may not be right, but we ought to at least consider it, because they may have a better viewpoint of the situation than what we do. And it's wise, as Moses does here, to listen to that, especially if it's somebody that we trust, somebody that has shown their care and love for us in times past. Now, I want you to go back in the context here and understand why Moses was so willing to listen to Jethro. He was willing to listen to Jethro because he had a great relationship with Jethro. This wasn't Jethro coming up, no relationship to Moses whatsoever, and him start telling Moses what he needs to do. That doesn't work. The relationship comes first. You got to have a relationship. They got to know that you care. They got to know that you're reasonable and practical and fair. That you're not just a critic. They've got to know that there's something more there. And we see that. Verse 5, Jethro came. We see in verse 7, the reception. Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and did obeisance and kissed him. And they asked each other of their welfare, and they came into the tent. There's a lot in this verse that tells us about the relationship that they had. Notice that he did obeisance. He showed great reverence and respect. Moses has great respect for his father-in-law, and he demonstrates that respect. He kissed him. We see this affection that Moses has toward his father-in-law. And they begin to ask each other. Moses asked him, and he asked Moses of their welfare. They care about each other. They're concerned about each other. And they came into the tent. They're receptive, they're welcoming, they show hospitality. We see this great relationship. Now notice in verse 8 that Moses is going to begin to tell his father-in-law of all that's happened, of all the Lord has done, those are good things, and of all the travail that had come upon them by the way, and how that the Lord had delivered them. Now Moses is just talking and talking and talking. Moses needs to talk. He needs to talk. That's one of the dangers for elders and preachers, is they need to talk, but who can they talk to? Elders talk to other elders? Yes. One of them may be at a higher point than the other at the moment. They may be able to help each other along in that way, but they may be dealing with the same issue, the same problem. They may both be needing that. Who do they talk to? Preachers. Who do they talk to? That's the difficulty here. Moses had somebody to talk to, and Jethro's letting him talk. That's doing him good. I love the way that there are so many things that happen in the Scriptures that are happening on God's timetable, in God's way, and yet we don't even realize it. Moses is on the road to burnout. And this is the very moment when Jethro shows up. That's God's timing. That's God's timing. That Jethro is there when he's needed the most. Maybe there are people that come into your life and my life in much the same way. Notice that Jethro rejoiced in verse 9. There's no jealousy between Jethro and Moses. No, Jethro's rejoicing at the things that have happened, the good things that have happened in Moses' life. They're sharing in that. And so we see this great relationship that they have. And if you're going to be able to help people, you've got to first start by having a relationship with them. And Jethro has that with Moses. But notice that Jethro next is going to ask some questions in verse 14. He says, "What is this thing that thou doest for the people?" He had just seen it, but he wants to clarify. He wants to make sure, is that really what I saw? Is that really what was happening? I want to make sure. He asked the question. Then he says, "Why sittest thou thyself alone?" And you ought to underline that word "alone," because he's already put his finger on the problem. "And all the people stand by thee from morning to evening." He just saw it. One day he saw it, and immediately he knows, Moses, you're alone and you shouldn't be alone. Moses, there's a long line of people. There shouldn't be a long line of people. Moses, this took from morning to evening. It really shouldn't take that long. There's some problems, Moses. We need to address those problems. He's going to do it. But we see the evaluation that he gives. And he gives a straightforward evaluation, if you'll look. And Moses is going to answer. He's going to tell him exactly what he's doing. He says in verse 16, when they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and another, and I do make them know the statutes of God and the laws. Moses' father-in-law said unto him, the thing that thou doest is not good. Talk about being straightforward. Moses, what you're doing is not good. Now that language is the same language we read earlier in the Bible in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18 that Moses is going to record. Coming from the mouth of God, when God looks at man by himself, a woman has been made, and God says it is not good for man to be alone. Man needs somebody. You know what Jethro is saying? Moses, you need somebody. He's bringing his wife back. That's going to be a help to him. But he needs some other people in his life that are going to help him. He understands that. He says, what you're doing is not good. Now, Moses might very well have argued, well, sure it's good. I'm helping these people. They need me. They need me to judge between the matters that are dividing them. That's a good thing for me to do. They need me to teach them the law of God. That's a good thing for me to do. And yes, it was a good thing to do. But the way in which he was doing it wasn't good. That's what's being addressed here. But he's straightforward. Notice something else. He says, thou wilt surely wear away, both thou and this people that is with thee. Moses, if you keep doing it this way, you're going to wear away. That's another word for burnout. You're going to burn out if you keep doing it this way. And he says, both thou and the people. Something leaders, something preachers have to understand is that if you go down, more than likely there will be other people who will go down with you. Now that's a tremendous burden, responsibility, but it's true. It's true. If Moses went down, he wasn't going to be the only casualty. And so you need to care about yourself because of your own health and because of your own salvation. You need to care about yourself, but you also need to care about yourself because other people are depending on you. I'm not putting more pressure on you. I'm just helping you to realize, take care of yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be able to take care of others. You've got to do both. He continues. He says, thou wilt wear away, both thou and this people that's with thee, for this thing is too heavy for thee. Moses, you're trying to carry too much. You can't carry all of this. You need somebody to help you carry it. For thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Notice again, he says, you're trying to do it alone. You can't do it alone. Pointing out, giving an evaluation. Now to Moses' credit, Moses is going to listen. Notice in verse 24, so Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. So Jethro gets great points for recognizing the problem and talking to Moses about it. Moses gets great points for listening, giving consideration to it, and following the advice that he was given. Win-win in this situation. But let's consider the second thing, and that is motivate. The first thing is evaluate, and you need somebody in your life that can help you evaluate where you are, how you can improve, how you can change, how you can improve those things. But it's got to be the right person, somebody that loves you and cares about you. Then the second matter is the matter of motivate. If you look at the context here in verse 19, Jethro says, hearken now unto my voice, I will give thee counsel. Here's Moses' father-in-law, and he says to Moses, Moses, I'll help you. I'll help you, Moses. I know what you're struggling with, and I will help you. I want to help you. You're not going to have to do this just by yourself. I'm here to help you. Step in and help people. That's what Jethro's willing to do. But there's something greater here, and he says, God shall be with thee. Talk about motivation. Moses, I'm going to help you, but you know, I'm just a man too, and I have my weaknesses and I have my frailties, and I don't know everything either. But Moses, God will help you. God's going to help you. We need to encourage those that are in the eldership, encourage those that are in the ministry. We need to encourage them and continually remind them, God will help you. We sang a song in chapel every day of preaching school. I know that the Lord will make a way for me. We sang it every morning. I know that the Lord will make a way for me. And I look at my life and I think about some of the struggles I've been through, and I say, I can say honestly, the Lord has made a way for me. Sometimes it's been uphill. Sometimes it's been pretty narrow. But He's always made a way. There's always been a door of escape. There's always been provisions. When I needed provisions, God's always done that. And here's the consolation that Jethro is giving to Moses. Moses, you don't have to do this by yourself. I'm here to help you. But more than that, God will help you. Joshua chapter 1, Moses is going to pass that same advice on to the one that will follow him, Joshua. He's going to say, as God was with me, so He will be with you. Joshua, God's with you. Give that kind of motivation to them. People who are struggling need the motivation to know that God is going to be there with them. God's not going to forsake them. He's not going to leave them. Matthew 28, verse 20, Hebrews 13, 5 and 6. Let's consider the third thing that Jethro is going to do. And that is the matter of relegate. Evaluate, motivate, relegate. Now look at the context. Moses tells him he's doing two things. Verse 16, he's judging between them. He's making them know the statutes of God and His laws. If I understand the context right, what Jethro is going to tell Moses is, Moses, this matter of judging that you're doing is not the most important thing you do. Moses, that needs to be moved to the back burner, and teaching needs to be moved to the front. Now, let me suggest why that's the case. Moses is teaching one-on-one. That's not the most useful way to do this. Now, sometimes, yes, you sit down with a person one-on-one and counsel them and help them, but sometimes you can do it with a crowd. Moses could teach the law of God to a whole congregation of people. That made a lot more sense than scheduling one appointment right after the other to teach them something. You can cover a lot of bases at one time, and Moses should have been doing that. And I think Jethro is going to give him that advice. Few cases, yes, individually, but many cases could be handled that way. Basically, what Jethro is going to say to Moses is, Moses, you have two great responsibilities. One is in the work, in the area of a priest, and the other is in the area of a prophet. Now, what's the difference in a priest and a prophet? A priest is somebody that comes from the people to God with a sacrifice. A prophet is somebody that comes from God to the people with a message. Moses was coming and going. He had both of those responsibilities of coming from the people to God, but also of coming from God to the people. That's what his work was. Don't get sidetracked into all the other things that are good works that need to be done. Moses, here's what you do. You keep them in order. You keep them in their proper place. You relegate some things to the back burner so that the most important things stay the most important things. Judging and teaching were both important, but teaching was more important than what judging was. There are others that could help with that and could do that, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But let's think about it in the New Testament. Acts chapter 6 and verses 1 through 4, we have a situation that comes up in the early church where some of the widows are being neglected in the daily ministration. And so the apostles realize this is a problem. This needs to be dealt with. But they realize that we've got two major things that we need to be doing. One is prayer and the other is the ministry of the Word, Acts 6 and verse 4. Waiting on tables, is that important? Absolutely. Does it need to be done? Yes. Can we overlook it? No. It's got to be done. But there are others that can do that, where we can give ourselves to ministry and to prayer. That's where we're needed most. That's where our strengths lie. That's where our abilities will work best. That's where we can make the biggest difference. Preacher, your number one job is to preach. Everything else is secondary to that. Is it important? Is it good? Will it help you? Sure. But that's your job. Elder, your job is to shepherd. That's your job. Don't get caught up in other things that people can do and need to be doing. Realize that those things can be relegated, they can be moved to the back so that you can focus on what you need to do the most. And we create an unsustainable situation for most preachers in the church today. I just look back over the things that I have done over the years. You know, for a number of years, I was the one that copied every bulletin that was copied and folded every bulletin that was folded. I was the one that cut the grass around the church building. I was the one that on occasion took time to clean the church building and do other things. Were all of those things good? Yes. Are any of those things beneath me? No. Are all those things a good example? Yes. But I've got a job. And my job is to preach. My job's to preach. And if I spend so much time doing some of these other things, I'm going to get away from doing the thing that I can do and ought to do the most. And that's preach. Same thing's true of elders and the work that they do. So Jethro's addressing that. But then we talk about a fourth thing, and that is the matter of delegating. So we evaluate, we motivate, we relegate, and now we delegate. If you look at verse 21, he says, "Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties and rulers of ten. Let them judge the people at all seasons, and it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee." Moses, you need to delegate. Moses, you need to take some of these matters and let other able men help you do that. Moses was being made aware, verse 14, don't do it alone. In verse 18, he's being told, don't do it alone. In verse 20, 21, he's being told, select some men, some able men. I want you to understand something. And it's right here in the text. And that is that Moses wasn't the only man. Moses wasn't the only man who was able. Preacher, you're not the only man, I hope, in the congregation that's able. Elder, you're not the only man in the congregation that's able. There are other able men, and if you always do everything, there never will be the development of anybody else. Moses was on the road to burnout, and when he burned out, there was nobody else that was going to have any experience doing this. He needed to bring some other men in, so that when it was his time to go, there were other men that were ready to step in and take that responsibility and that had some experience doing it. That's what delegation is. That's where it comes to bear. What great advice this is. We think about the great advice that Moses is being given right here. Notice the kind of men that are to be selected. They're men that fear God. God's the supreme judge. If they're going to judge, they have to recognize God's position over them. They have to be men of truth, men of integrity, men of character. They have to be men that hate covetousness. They can't be bribed. They can't be bought. They're men that are going to stand where they need to stand. These are the kind of men that are being selected. That's 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 in the New Testament in the church. The kind of men that God wants to serve in these positions and these works. But the fifth thing, and Alan's already here, so we got to go very quickly through this one. And that is to differentiate. Notice the reference. We've already seen it. There are great matters and there are small matters. There are easier matters and harder matters. And not only does Moses have to delegate in the sense that there have to be other men that are helping him, have the ability and have the character to be able to help him, but then there has to be a difference. You have to notice the difference between the matters so that the proper cases get handed to the proper person. There are some matters that Moses still needs to deal with. There are some matters that are ultimately going to have to be taken to God. They're so unique, they're so different, that they're going to have to go and see what God's judgment is on them. You look at our court system. We have a Supreme Court. Does the Supreme Court look at every case? No. They wear themselves out. It would be so impractical, there would be a line stretching around our country if they had to look at every case. They don't look at every case. They only look at a very few cases, special cases that need their expertise. That was the case right here as well. Matthew 23 and verse 23, Jesus rebukes the Jewish leaders on one occasion. He says, "You've omitted the weightier matters of the law." Oh, you've made your judgments on mint and anise and cumin, and you've made sure that people give a tenth of the smallest spices. You're good at that, Jesus says. What about love and mercy and judgment? Those are a lot bigger issues. And you've neglected them. You've omitted them. Now, somebody says, one thing's just as important as another. Jesus didn't say that. Is it good to give a tithe of mint, anise, and cumin? Yeah, it's good. That's a good thing to do. But it doesn't compare to love and mercy and judgment. It just doesn't. That's not my evaluation of it. That's not my take on it. That was His take on it. These are weightier matters. If you do those little things, and they were doing those little things for show, and they were omitting the weightier matters of the law, they were far from being what God had plans for them to be. We need to make sure that we handle the big matters. The little matters will generally fall into place. If we get the big matters in place, if we are able to delegate and we're able to make a distinction between little matters and big matters, and we all have to do that, and Moses had to do that. So we've talked about burnout. I don't know if I've solved your issues. I don't know that they can be solved in 30 minutes or 40 minutes of lesson. But I've pointed you to the chapter that will show you the answer to the problems that you're facing. Thank you for your attention.